Welcome back to the deep dive. We've got a fascinating one today for anyone who has ever, looked at their phone dying and wished they could just pull electricity out of the air.
It's the ultimate dream, isn't it? I mean, energy is everywhere. Light, heat, vibration. But usually it's just out of reach. It's too small, too scattered.
Exactly. And today we're looking at the technology that tries to bridge that gap. We are zooming in on a specific piece of silicon, a chip called the BQ25570 from Texas Instruments.
Right.
It's an integrated circuit designed to take the tiniest scraps of power scraps, so small they're effectively electrical whispers, and turn them into something that can actually run a computer.
And we aren't just reading the marketing brochure today. We're digging into an application that pushes this chip to its absolute limit.
Yeah, we're looking at a bench characterization report from the Stratasan development blog dated November 23, 2025. So this isn't theory. This is for a high-altitude balloon mission.
A stratosond.
So we're talking about a system that has to survive in the stratosphere, running off nothing but a tiny bit of sunlight in conditions that would, well, freeze a normal battery solid.
And that creates this classic engineering standoff. You have the data sheet, which promises the world, amazing efficiency, all this power. And then you have the cold, hard reality of the physics bench.
And the goal of this deep dive is to see what happens when those two collide.
So let's talk about the chip itself. The BQ25570. The docs call it an ultra-low power boost charger. But the specs, they seem a little impossible at first glance.
They really do. It claims it can start up from 330 millivolts, and then once it's running, it can scavenge energy down to 100 millivolts.
To put that in perspective for everyone, 100 millivolts, that's 0.1 volts, is basically nothing. It's barely a signal. A single AA battery is 1.5 volts.
So 15 times smaller.
And you're trying to make it do actual work.
And that's the core problem, isn't it? You have this tiny puddle of voltage, but to charge a lithium battery, you need around 4 volts. You have to step it up somehow.
Precisely. It's a boost converter. I think the best way to think about it is like a water system. You've got this wide, very shallow river of electricity coming in. That's your low voltage solar panel.
Okay.
And you need to pump that water up into a tall, narrow water tower. That's your battery. The chip is the pump.
But pumps aren't free. They cost energy to run.
And that is the loss budget we're going to get into. The central question of this bench test was, can this chip take two tiny solar cells, which produce about 1 volt combined, and boost that up to charge a battery without just burning all that precious energy as heat?
So let's talk about how the engineer behind Stratasan actually tested this. I love this part because they didn't just, stick the solar panel out the window.
Oh, no, absolutely not. That would be the amateur move. If you put it out the window, a cloud goes by or the sun angle changes and suddenly your data is completely useless.
Right. It's all noisy.
You can't do scientific characterization on a maybe.
So they had to fake the sun.
They did. They needed total control.
Okay. So how exactly do you fake a sun in a lab?
You use a programmable DC power supply.
Yeah.
But, and this is the key thing, you can't just hook up a battery and call it a day. Solar panels are weird. They're kind of squishy.
Squishy.
In electrical terms, yeah.
Hmm.
A normal power supply is rigid. It gives you 5 volts no matter what you plug into it. But a solar panel, if you try to draw too much current from it, the voltage just sags. It collapses.
Ah, okay.
So the engineer had to program the power supply to be a current-limited voltage source.
Mm-hmm.
They basically taught a robot how to behave like a star.
That's really cool. It's like acting school for electricity. So you have a fake sun on one side. What about the battery side? Because real batteries are so annoying to test, right?
They take forever.
You have to wait hours for them to charge and discharge.
Exactly. If you want to know the efficiency at exactly 3.8 volts, you don't want to wait 3 hours for a real battery to drain down to that number. So they use something called a bipolar power supply.
Okay, what does that do?
It's a device that can sink current. It just swallows electricity while holding the voltage rock steady. So it pretends to be a battery that is infinitely large. It never gets full. It never dies.
So they have this perfectly controlled, frozen in time environment, fake sun, fake battery, and then they ran the sweep.
The sweep is where all the good stuff is.
Mm-hmm.
They swept the input voltage, the fake sun, from a tiny 0.1 volts all the way up to 1.2 volts. And for every single step, they measured exactly how much energy made it into the battery.
This is what I mean about data sheet versus reality. A data sheet just gives you the highlight reel.
The sweep gives you the blooper tape, too.
It gives you the warts and all map. And they found some very interesting warts. Let's start at the absolute bottom, the cold start.
The source calls this zombie mode.
Zombie mode. I love that. So the chip can technically operate at 0.1 volts. But the data was weird.
It was bizarre. At 0.1 volts, the efficiency reading initially looked like it was over 100%.
Which would mean we just broke the laws of thermodynamics, perpetual motion.
I wish. No, the engineer points out this is an artifact of burst mode. At that ultra-low voltage, the chip isn't running smoothly. It's gasping. It takes a sip of energy, holds it, and then just bursts it out.
It's messy.
Incredibly messy. And because the energy is pulsed, the measurement equipment gets confused. The takeaway from the blog was really clear. Even if the chip says it works at 0.1 volts, you don't want to live there. It's the here be dragons part of the map.
Okay, so they moved up the voltage ladder. Where did they find the sweet spot? Where was the chip actually happy?
The data really cleared up between 0.7 volts and 1.2 volts. Hmm. And specifically at 1.0 volt input, which is what you get from those two solar cells wired in series charging a 4.0 volt battery. That was the magic zone.
And what was the efficiency number they got there?
They hit about 73%.
Okay. I want to pause on that number. 73%. If I got a 73 on a math test, I wouldn't be bragging. Why is 73% a win here?
You have to look at the physics of the lift. I mean, we are stepping voltage up by a factor of 4, from 1 volt to 4 volts. To do that in a package the size of a grain of rice, 73% is solid.
But that still means 27% is just gone. Poof.
Yeah.
Vanished. The blog post actually breaks down this loss budget, and I think this is crucial. Where does that energy actually go?
Yeah, it's a death by a thousand cuts. The biggest thief is something called switching loss. Inside the chip, you have these tiny transistors, MOSFETs, that act as switches. Mm. They turn on and off hundreds of thousands of times a second to chop up the electricity and boost it.
Yeah.
Every single time they flip, you pay a tax. You lose a tiny bit of power. That's about 10% of the total loss right there.
Just the cost of doing business.
Then you have the inductor. That's the magnetic component that stores the energy. It heats up. Yeah. You lose energy in the magnetic core and in the copper wire itself. That's another 8%.
Okay, so we're at 18% lost already. What else?
Then you have quiescent current.
That sounds peaceful.
It does, doesn't it? But it's actually another tax. That's the energy the chip uses just to stay alive. Even if it's not charging anything, the chip needs to think. It needs to monitor voltages, check safety limits.
So the brain activity of the chip.
Exactly. And that eats about 5% and then another 4% or so in rectification losses.
It really adds up. It shows you how hard it is to move electrons around without spilling some.
It does. And this brings us to one of the most important insights from the document, the physics of voltage ratios. This explains why 1.0 volt is the sweet spot.
This involved duty cycle. Can you unpack that for us?
Sure. Think back to that water pump analogy. The duty cycle is basically how hard the pump has to work. It's the ratio of time the switch is on versus the time it's off.
Okay.
So if you were lifting from 1 volt to 4 volts, the math works out to a duty cycle of about 75%. That turns out to be a Goldilocks zone.
Goldilocks how?
The switch is closed 75% of the time to build up energy and open 25% of the time to dump it into the battery. The flow is smooth. The currents are manageable.
But what if you try to boost from that really low range, like 0.2 volts?
That is the nightmare scenario. To get from 0.2 volts up to 4 volts, a 20x multiplier,
yeah,
you need a duty cycle of roughly 95%.
Meaning the pump is just straining 95% of the time.
Right. You are spending 95% of the cycle building up a massive, violent current.
Mm.
And you only have this tiny 5% window to try and shove all that energy into the battery.
That sounds very inefficient.
It's electrically violent. It causes huge current spikes. And since feet is proportional to the square of current, you just start burning everything up. Efficiency falls off a cliff.
And this leads to a really key design decision they validated. The Stratasonde uses two solar cells in series.
Yes. This is a critical point.
Now, intuitively, you might think, wait, if I put two cells in series, I double the voltage, but I cut the current in half. Why is that better?
This is a perfect example of system-level thinking. If you just looked at the solar panels, you might think parallel is better for more current. But you have to look at the chip.
Because the chip hates low voltage.
The chip hates low voltage. If you use one cell, you're at 0.5 volts. Your efficiency may be 50, 60%. If you stack two cells, you're at 1.0 volt. Your efficiency jumps to 73%.
Ah.
That massive jump in conversion efficiency more than makes up for the lower current. You actually get more watts into the battery because you aren't wasting half of it on the conversion.
That's a great lesson. You can't just optimize one part. You have to optimize the whole system.
Exactly. You have to play to the chip's strengths.
Now, speaking of system optimization, the source threw me a curveball on the battery side. I assumed, maybe incorrectly, that charging a higher voltage battery would be fine.
You would think so, but the data showed the exact opposite. This was the battery surprise.
Run those numbers for us.
So when the chip was charging a battery at 3.5 volts, efficiency was high, around 73%. But when they simulated a higher voltage battery, around 5.5 volts, the efficiency just plummeted to 55%.
That's a huge drop, almost 20% loss just because the battery's at a higher voltage.
It goes right back to the boost ratio. It's harder to pump water to a 50-foot tower than a 30-foot tower. The chip has to work harder, the duty cycle goes up, and all those losses we talked about get worse.
So if they had used a standard 12-volt battery pack, like you might find in a drone,
it would have been a disaster.
Yeah.
Boosting 1 volt to 12 volts, you'd be lucky to get 40% efficiency. You'd just be cooking the chip instead of charging the battery.
And this explains why the Stratasan project chose LTO batteries. Lithium titanium oxide.
Right. LTO chemistry has a lower nominal voltage. A two-cell pack sits right around 4.4 volts. It's perfectly matched to the sweet spot of the harvester.
They literally tailored the chemistry of the battery to the physics of the chip.
They did. And that's the difference between a project that works on paper and one that works in the stratosphere.
Speaking of things that don't work, the blog mentions the vicious cycle of dawn and dusk. This sounded almost poetic, but also terrifying for a robot.
It is the Achilles heel of any solar harvesting system. We think of sunrise and sunset as just less light, but for the chip, it's a nonlinear problem.
So walk us through it. The sun starts to set.
Okay, sun goes down, light intensity drops. That means the voltage coming off the panel drops.
It goes below that 1.0 volt sweet spot.
Right. And as it drops towards 0.5 volts, the chip's efficiency starts to tank. So at the exact moment when you have the least amount of energy available, the chip starts wasting the highest percentage of it.
Yeah, it's just brutal.
It's a death spiral. Less power and leads to lower efficiency, which leads to even less power out. It means the system stops charging way before the sun actually sets.
It effectively shortens the solar day by hours.
It does. They lose the shoulders of the day.
Let's get into the real world versus data sheet showdown. We know the efficiency was a bit lower than promised. But did it actually move power?
It did. They measured the throughput. The maximum measured output was about 114 milliwatts.
And the datasheet promised up to 112 milliwatts.
So in terms of raw muscle, the chip actually beat the spec sheet. That's rare. Usually, manufacturers overpromise.
That is rare. But what about for the Stratasan setup specifically? With their two little solar cells, how much power are they actually getting?
Based on the bench test, they expect about 55 milliwatts of charging power in direct sun.
55 milliwatts? That sounds tiny. Is that enough to fill a battery?
It is, if the battery is small enough. They're using a 40 milliamp hour battery, and the math says it'll take about 3.3 hours of direct sun to charge it fully.
3.3 hours? That's manageable. It leaves a margin for clouds and things.
It does. But let's go back to that efficiency gap. The datasheet promised 80 to 85% peak efficiency. The bench test only delivered 70 to 75%.
Where did that missing 10% go? The engineer seemed a little annoyed by this in the blog.
Engineers are always annoyed when reality isn't perfect. The datasheet numbers come from a perfect lab board designed by Texas Instruments. The Stratasan test was on their custom flight board.
So real-world messiness.
Exactly. The expert attributes the gap to things like a copper trace on the circuit board being a millimeter too long, adding resistance, or maybe the inductor has slightly higher resistance. All these tiny physical things.
It's the friction of reality.
It is. But they noted that 70% is still acceptable for the mission. And the upside is, if they really need more power later, they know there's 5 to 10 milliwatts of free power left on the table if they optimize the board layout.
It's like finding loose change in the sofa cushions, but for electrons.
And when you're in the stratosphere, that loose change can keep your sensors running through the night.
Which brings us to the final looming problem, the future unknowns. This entire test we've been discussing, it took place at room temperature.
In a lab, on a bench. 25 degrees Celsius.
And the Stratasan day is going to the stratosphere.
Where it is roughly minus 60 degrees Celsius.
That is a massive difference. What happens to this delicate electronic dance at minus 60?
A lot of things, and most of them are bad. The source identifies what it calls a temperature cliff.
What changes?
First, the battery. All batteries suffer in the cold. At that temperature, a battery's internal resistance can shoot up by 5 times. It causes voltage sag.
So even if the harvester is pushing power, the battery might just resist taking it.
Exactly. It's like trying to fill that water tower, but the pipe is frozen to the size of a straw.
Okay, that's bad. What else?
Well, The solar cells might actually get a little more efficient in the cold, but the parasitics of all the other components on the board change unpredictably. Capacitors lose capacitance. Resistance changes.
So the whole sweet spot map we just spent all this time discussing, it might just shift.
It almost certainly will. It might move to a different voltage entirely. The efficiency curve could flatten out or just drop.
So what's the next step? You can't just launch it and hope for the best.
The blog identifies it clearly. Thermal chamber testing. They need to put this whole rig in a specialized freezer and run the sweep all over again. They have to remap the territory at minus 60.
And accelerated life testing.
Right. Because in the stratosphere, the temperature swings wildly every day. From negative 60 C at night to maybe plus 20 C in direct sun, that thermal cycling expands and contracts the solder joints.
Like bending a paperclip back and forth.
Exactly. Will the solder crack? Will a component pop off the board? They don't know yet. The bench test proved the electronics work, but it hasn't proved they can survive the environment.
So bringing this all back to the big picture, we started with the promise of scavenging power from thin air. What is the final verdict on the BQ2 5570?
I'd say the verdict is that it's not magic, but it is a workhorse. The deep dive confirmed that if you follow the rules of physics, two cells in series, a lower voltage battery, you can hit a solid 70% efficiency.
It seems like the biggest lesson here is about skepticism, really.
Absolutely. So what here is a universal truth in engineering. You cannot design a system based on the marketing numbers on a PDF. You have to build, measure, and break things on the bench.
Because the difference between the 85% on the data sheet and the 70% in reality.
That 15% gap is the difference between a mission that survives the long cold night and one that goes silent forever. If you planned your power budget assuming 85%, your balloon would die.
Oh.
Validation is everything.
It's a great reminder that even in our digital world, physical testing is still king.
It is.
Yeah.
Nature does not care about your simulation.
I want to leave you with a thought today. We've talked about how this chip struggles in low light, that vicious cycle where low voltage leads to low efficiency. We treat it as an engineering hurdle, something to be overcome with a better chip or a smarter battery. But consider this. If that vicious cycle is inherent to the silicon itself, if it's just physics, does that mean there is a hard physical limit to how far away from a star we can ever send an autonomous machine? Is there a line in the deep shadows of the universe where the physics of voltage boosting simply starves our robots to death?
That is a haunting thought. Physics always wins in the end.
Something to mull over. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll catch you next time.